It's kind of like you imagine a giant woods. There's this path that we always take, and we've taken it because it's the only path we knew when we were younger. It may have served us to protect ourselves, but it doesn't serve us anymore. So we are going to cut the branches, cut the trees. Oh, look, it's so much work to do. So we have to keep doing it. It's all about repetition, repetition, repetition. So finally, at one point, the more we do it, the more that path is just ingrained and we choose to take that path.
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? For a while now, I have been fascinated by the science of habits and how our brains learn and reinforce behavior patterns over time. If you think about it, our whole lives are made up of small behaviors we repeat hour to hour or day to day, so habits are really important. And they can be amazingly positive forces in our lives or actually destructive. I think for most of us, it's kind of a mix. And for women who are approaching midlife or firmly in midlife, I think harnessing our habits and changing those unhealthy patterns starts to take on a bit more urgency. First of all, as we get older, our bodies just don't seem to tolerate things the way they used to sometimes, whether it's certain foods or sugar, too much caffeine or too much wine, or maybe it's sitting in front of the computer too much or something you're not doing, like not moving your body enough. And we also start to realize that the amount of time we have left to change those habits for the better is shrinking. At the same time, though, we've simply had more time for those habits to become firmly ingrained. I used to really struggle with feeling like I must not have enough willpower, and that if I just adopted a more nose-to-the-grindstone mentality or found the right motivation or downloaded the right app, I could change every unhealthy habit and add only healthy new habits. The thing is, though, that's not really how the science of habit formation works. There are neural pathways that get formed when we make the same choices over and over, to the point where we're barely choosing anymore. That's the same reason we can seem to go on autopilot when driving a familiar route, or why it's so easy to find yourself mindlessly scrolling Instagram instead of like getting up and going for a walk. You might actually want to take the walk more than you want to scroll Instagram, but in the moment, your brain just defaults to the thing it's used to. And trying to force yourself to stop without replacing that old habit with something new in a repeated way is a recipe for frustration and self-doubt. So I was talking with a friend of mine who wants to replace a less than healthy habit with some more healthy routines, and she mentioned that she was about to begin working with today's guest, Emily Huber. Emily lives in the same town we do and owns a studio called Body Brain Balance. As soon as my friend described the work Emily does, I knew I had to talk to her. Emily has a long background as a massage therapist and yoga instructor, two things I'm already very much a fan of. But she is also a certified facilitator of a five-step meditation process called neurosculpting. Neurosculpting actually helps you retrain and rewire your brain. It leans on neuroplasticity, or the idea that the brain can reorganize itself away from old patterns so that you can more easily choose new, healthier behaviors. In this episode, Emily actually walks me through the beginning of a neurosculpting session, and I have to say, I am so intrigued now. This is a great conversation about how our brains really can be trained and harnessed to make us more physically, mentally, and emotionally healthy, and I know you're going to love it. But first, I want to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Vionic. Since discovering Vionic footwear, one habit I have not had a hard time sticking to is wearing more comfortable and supportive shoes. Vionic makes this really easy because all their shoes and boots feature three-zone comfort that offers stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. And they have such cute styles and colors, you don't have to choose between healthy feet and looking pulled together. As we transition into fall weather, I know my go-to is going to be the Shauna booty. It's an on-trend urban lace style in great colors. And with Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside. So there's no risk. Go to vionicshoes.com and use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's vionicshoes.com and use the promo code MORE, M-O-R, for free shipping. Okay, let's get to my interview with Emily Huber of Body Brain Balance. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much.
I am really excited about this. We, you know, as I said in the intro, you and I live in the same town, and a friend of mine mentioned that she was going to start one of your programs. And as she was describing it, I thought, this is so cool. I really need to learn more about this. So before we start giving all of that away about neurosculpting, just Emily, tell us about the work you do with your clients. How would you describe it overall?
Well, that is a wonderful question. Well, it varies with each client. It depends what services we're doing. Sometimes it's specifically just neurosculpting, meditation. Sometimes it's a combination of therapeutic massage and neurosculpting. Sometimes it's just therapeutic massage. Sometimes it's yoga and neurosculpting. It varies. It really varies. But I think the main thing is body positive, brain positive, health and wellness oriented, whatever works for you. And just figuring out what tools are for you specifically and adding to them, sharpening them, and making it so everyone can live their best, fullest life as possible with whatever service resonates with them, because everyone's so different.
Well, okay. So this podcast is really aimed at women, maybe heading into their 40s and beyond. And I'm just thinking, I'm just guessing that you have a lot of clients in that age range or that demographic.
In fact, I do.
So why do you think it's such a good time for women to be, you know, really seeking out this? Because it sounds like a very holistic practice that you've got there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really important because there's so many transitions of life. And I feel like this is the time to stand in our power just in the stage of life, this moment. Like, there's so many transitions that we go through as women. And then to top it off, we have the world that we're dealing with.
Right.
And it's very ageist. And it is also, it's like when you're young, you're not really thought to be smart and you don't get good jobs or whatnot. But then when you start to get older, you start to get really judgmental, like judged on how you look and et cetera. And it's just like this whole thing. It's all a big judgment for women, because I do believe, this may sound dramatic, but there is a war going on women right now. And it's heartbreaking. We're fighting back. And I believe that we all need to do that in collective energy. And I believe that we need to do that in community. And we need each other for that. And we have to feed ourselves in order to fight this war. And we need to do that through self-care and with whatever resonates with you, nutrition, meditation, yoga, therapeutic massage. Like, there's so many different ways for self-care and so many different things to do. And this Body Brain Balance is a studio for some of the options and ways to strengthen our own tools and gain new tools and then take them out into the world and use them in our day-to-day life. Because we need women. We need women. We need women to be able to stand up and show up for our sisters, because it's a really scary time and we can't lay down. We have to stand up.
How long have you been doing this kind of work?
I got my first licensed in 2003.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was going on in your life when you decided to, you know, move in this direction?
I've always had a belief that holistic approach is the way to center my own personal self.
Okay.
And then I realized that I want to offer that. It's always, I actually have low vision. And so touch has always been more of my first language. And then I just kind of went with that. And
it seems like you've added on other modalities and practices over. So you maybe started with one and then added on and on. So let's talk about neurosculpting, because you've described it sort of, well, the way it's described on your website makes it sound kind of like meditation, but the name of it sounds so technical and scientific. So tell us what is happening.
Oh, neurosculpting has changed my practice tremendously. The reason neurosculpting drew me is because it combines brain science, mindfulness, and meditation. It is a full brain approach, and it deals with both the right and the left side of the brain. So sometimes meditation can gear more towards the right side. Like, you know, it's very like, be a light, try this, this whole thing. And that never resonated with me. I don't really want to be told how to how to relax. I mean, it's great. It's really great. And there's some really beautiful aspects to it. I really appreciate it. However, for me, I just wanted more of a full brain approach where I understood the science behind why I was meditating and why and what it was actually doing for me scientifically, as well as the woo person. Like that's, I'm super intuitive and woo and I'm all over that. But like with this, I just wanted it to be a little bit more full brain approach so I could get a longer lasting effect and understand more about it. So it's first, so basically the five, it is a meditation. It is a meditation, but there's just the whole premise behind it. So there's five steps to it. Shall I go through the five steps?
I'm fascinated. Yes.
Awesome. So the five steps, first we quiet the limbic system and we do that through focusing on internal, external safety, predictability, and comfort.
So the limbic system is kind of what creates that fight or flight response?
Exactly. The limbic system is the stress response. So when our limbic system is up, our stress is up and it is the fight or flight. And when we're in fight or flight, all of our blood and oxygen goes to the limbs and we are ready to go. We are like, we are gone. And so our digestion stops and we are just like everything in our organs that are don't like, they're not getting oxygen blood flow because we are like, I'm going to kill that bear. And you know, the thing is we're born ready to kill. We have our flight and fight response ready to go, fight, flight, freeze. We are good. But our prefrontal cortex, which is our creative mind, does not develop until 25, mid 20s, later for guys, earlier for girls, like 23, 4, 5 for women and 28, 9, 30 for guys. So that whole thing about boys maturing later is actually true. Yeah. Yeah. And so the prefrontal cortex, first of all, that's the creative mind. That's like big thinking. That is compassion, empathy, support, like seeing the big picture, being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And that skill, literally, we do not get until we are 25, that whole thing. Like, and so that, and then once the prefrontal cortex is like, I'm ready to go, because it, you know, it varies exactly when, but those are like the 20s that it happens, depending on who you are, but earlier for women, later for guys. And when that happens, it's not like developed, it just is ready to be developed, you know? So it's like, so now we have to then gain tools, sharpen them and build and be able to like, build our prefrontal cortex so we don't react in the fight or flight in the ways that are so easy to react in. And like we get agitated or we get triggered and it's so easy to go back into our automatic response and our self-defense. But the thing about neurosculpting is figuring out how to take a moment, create a whole new pathway. It's kind of like you imagine a giant woods and what we're doing here. There's this path that we always take and we've taken it because it's the only path we knew when we were younger. It may have served us to protect ourselves, but it doesn't serve us anymore. However, we are trying to create a whole new pathway in woods. So we are literally like, this is a giant field of wood. So we are going to cut the branches, cut the trees. Oh, look, it's so much work to do. So we have to keep doing it. It's all about repetition, repetition, repetition. So finally, at one point, the more we do it, the more that path is just ingrained and we choose to take that path by just organically rather than the old path that we know. So that is kind of the premise, but I will go into the five steps. I realize yeah. I derailed
you a little bit. Yeah.
So first we quiet the stress response and we do that focusing on internal and external safety, predictability, comfort. And once the stress response is quieted just by that, that is, we inspire the prefrontal cortex, the creative mind, to pay attention. And we do that through being mildly creative and directed awareness. And that's the induction. And we could stop there and get huge amount of benefits. But and that's been great. But we're going to continue often if we do a five step to step three. And step three is we toggle the right and left hemisphere of the brain. We do that through imagery, linguistics, the desire for experiential textures, vibrations, colors, numbers, letters. And so that engages both the right and the left hemisphere. We take an old fear and we remap it. We create a whole new story. And then, so we're creating a whole new story, taking an old fear, remapping it. And then we link, step four is we link a somatic cue. And we tap with our non-dominant hand or make a unique hand gesture. Any areas of activity or release, because then you can go back to it at any given point. You do the hand cue and it takes you right back to the meditation. And then if you're more of a, so that's more of a somatic, but if you're more linguistic, if you're more like that kind of thought process, we name it as well. So you want to refer back to the name and it takes you back. And there's no wrong way to be in the practice. I offer suggestions, you take them or adapt them, whatever works for you. It's entirely your journey and your meditation. Neurosculpting is just, as long as you follow those five steps, that's neurosculpting. And it it also works a lot with brain gym. It works with vagal toning and works with shaking, which has changed my practice tremendously. I've added all of that in my yoga classes that I teach.
Okay. And well, before we dive into all of those, because I want to hear about all those as well, but I want to just go back to this five-step process, because it sounds a little bit like what I've read about the science of habit building. And, mm-hmm. you know,
exactly. Habits, exactly. That's yeah. exactly it.
So mm-hmm. habits can either serve us or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're really trying to make like the path of least resistance, the path that is the healthiest and most satisfying for you. So like instead of reaching for, you know, the unhealthy food or drink or whatever, when you're stressed, you do something else that feels just as good. Mm-hmm. It's just like your body doesn't know it feels good yet because it's not the habit. So what
exactly?
Yeah. So what kind of, when you have clients come to you for this, what benefits are they trying to get? I imagine there's a large range of reasons why someone mm-hmm. might embark in this, but what are some common ones you see?
You know, I work a lot with folks who have addictions or have depression or want to lose weight. A lot of people have a lot of self-doubt mm-hmm. and a lot of people have transitions like, you know, they're dealing with like teenage children and like how all of a sudden they were all into their mom and then they're like don't want anything to do with them.
Yep.
And just like you know, I do a lot of prenatal, postnatal, and so there's a lot of postpartum that I work with. And also some people just want maintenance. Like they just want to be like, I want to feel okay in this body, in this world that I'm in. Mm. And right now there's so much fear going on with COVID and with everything that's happening in the world. A lot of people just literally need to quiet their mind. They just want to quiet their mind. And so we work a lot with how to get centered, how to get grounded, what they specifically need in that. And how to just like retrain. Like a lot of people come in being like, I'm so stressed out from work, or this is a whole new, now I'm teaching on the computer, or now I'm blah, blah, blah. And it's a totally different thing. And so there's right now there's lots of stress that we're working with.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed for myself in my 40s, that it used to be I used to be able to shift gears faster. Because everything was newer. So I didn't have these mm-hmm. ingrained habits. And if I wanted to stop doing something one way and start doing it a different way, I could make a very small change in my environment or my schedule for the day. And it was pretty easy to change. And now mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I've got decades under my belt as an adult now of doing things a certain way.
Right.
And it feels a lot harder. So talk to me a little bit about retraining. I know is one word you used and rewiring those neural pathways. Like literally what is happening when you're doing that?
We're literally having conversation with the synapse. I mean, you can imagine You know, it's like almost like if you imagine as simple as like kids walking down the street and like not paying attention. You know, have you, I remember like, you know, there's certain places that I go that I don't need to really pay attention to. And I just walk there, right, and I'm there. And like, that's kind of like the pathway. And what the thing about neurosculpting is being like, wait a minute, I don't want to take that. I want to actually get out of what the familiar is and awaken that creative mind, because curiosity and creativity is the prefrontal cortex. Mm. And so if we say, let me get out of automatic and into this present moment, the automatic can take us into fight. The automatic takes us, is often we're not being present in this present moment. We're like in the past, or we're in the future, or we're worried about this or thinking about that or whatever. So we're just going on automatic. And so we're just talking to the synapse and saying, let's go this way. And let's go this way because this one serves you better, because this vibrates you higher. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we quiet the stress response, we start to, we bring the blood and the oxygen in the midline. And all of a sudden there's more circulation and more blood flow. And our brain is all, we're about to use our prefrontal cortex, you know, we're about, and then as we quiet, I wonder, shall I lead you in an induction? I will guide you through step one and two.
Okay.
And we won't go through the five steps. We'll just do the one and two. Okay. And then you kind of have a grasp of, and the listeners, hello, everyone, has kind of just a taste of what,
sure,
the induction looks like.
Yeah.
Because it also neurosculpting, you know, it is brain and body, but like, it is brain science, but it's so experiential. It's okay. So experiential.
Well, I'm game. Yes, let's do it. Induct me.
All right. All right. So one of the other reasons I'll just say is that I really resonate with neurosculpting is there's no command language. So they never say like, do this, be this, this is, you know, there's always options. What if, perhaps, maybe, so they use this whole SCARF motto, which we can go into later, but, so there's just no wrong way to be in the practice. And that's part of the beauty of it. It's so your own. All right. So all right. Shall I begin?
Yes, okay. Please do.
Great. Okay. Getting comfortable. Whatever that means for you.
It's good that I record in my bed because I'm already pretty comfortable.
Perfect. I wonder what it might be like for you to notice your breath. Not change it. Just notice. Maybe that's through the nose, down the throat, to the lungs, and back out again. Or maybe something else. I wonder what it might be like to make a movement, any movement, just to acknowledge this next little bit of time is solely for you. Maybe you notice the only moment there is this present moment. And in this present moment, you are gifting yourself self-care. And how wonderful is that? Perhaps you notice if there were no tomorrow and no yesterday, you would be exactly where you need to be. Your breath is breathing, your heart is beating, and you are settling. Maybe you notice your breath breathes itself with or without your attention. Predictable, reliable, automatic. And you might notice you can slow down your body's time just by accessing your breath. And maybe you explore this by imagining your breath is an ocean wave. And perhaps you follow that ocean wave to the edge of the ocean through your breath. Or maybe you make shapes with your breath. How might you slow down your body's time using your breath? Perhaps you notice your heart beats itself with or without your attention. Predictable, reliable, automatic. And maybe you notice your lungs, belly, and diaphragm rise and fall in perfect harmony with or without your attention. Predictable, reliable, automatic. And you might notice gravity supports you with or without your attention. Predictable, reliable, automatic. And maybe you notice you are able-bodied and able-minded enough to be doing this exercise because you're doing it. You might notice you are safe enough and nurtured enough to be doing this exercise because you're doing it. And perhaps you notice your immediate needs are met enough to be doing this exercise because you're doing it. I wonder what it might be like to notice ways of comfort or safety you are feeling. Maybe that's the softness of your shirt against your body. Or perhaps your temperature is just right, or you're well fed and hydrated, or something else. As your stress response is quieting, focusing on internal and external safety, predictability, and comfort, I wonder what it might be like to engage your prefrontal cortex, to awaken your creative mind. And maybe you do this through imagining your tongue. And perhaps as you notice your tongue, you start to salivate. That is the power of directed awareness, the power of thought, the power of intention. Maybe you notice one hair on your head. Which hair might you notice? Perhaps you noticed your belly button. When is the last time you noticed your belly button? Maybe you noticed the bottom of your right foot. How interesting is noticing the bottom of your right foot? And I wonder what it might be like for you to imagine painting your name in your mind's eye backwards with your non-dominant hand. How interesting is that? And what would it be like to paint your name in actuality with your non-dominant hand backwards in the air? Breath still breathing itself. Gravity still supporting you. Your immediate needs still remain met. And I wonder what it might be like for you to notice you can change or adapt your internal landscape just by referring back to your breath or the induction. And I wonder what it might be like for you to take yourself out of the induction and start to come out. Maybe that's stretching or yawning or something else. And coming out at your own pace. So that was the induction.
Wow. I want to keep going, but we can't.
I know.
Today. I know. I'm like so curious to know what's next. That was great.
I
really wrote my name about three times backward in the air, and that was interesting. It did take
exactly
some thinking, and you know, some it's not what I'm used to.
Right. And that's the whole point. And that kind of merges us into brain gym, if I can jump into that, if you're up for that.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, let's take a quick break because I do definitely want to talk about brain gym and how that works with neurosculpting and the big picture. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. Hey, everyone. I just want to pop in really quick to remind you that you can still listen to season one of the Mother of Reinvention show. If you're just finding this podcast now, you're definitely going to want to check out our amazing lineup of guests from the first season. I talked to such cool women like Dagmara Kokonis, who went for her first hike at 40 and then wound up starting an adventure travel company for women. Angeline Bulley, who didn't start writing until her 40s and is now the author of Firekeeper's Daughter, which has been blowing up the best-selling charts since last spring. And travel writer and TV personality Heather Greenwood Davis, who took her then young sons on a year-long around-the-world trip 10 years ago, but these days is doing a lot more solo travel. Just scroll down in your podcast app to find last season's interviews, or you can head to motherofreinventionshow.com to find them there. Okay, back to the interview. Okay, Emily, so you gave me a taste of what a neurosculpting session is like. And then you also mentioned Brain Gym, which is another practice that you offer, but I'm not sure how those two things go together. So tell us more about that.
Well, part of the reason they link up together is how to change the pattern is to get curious, right? Like when we go into our old, it's like, it's so easy to just do what we've always done and not pay attention. But when we get curious, our prefrontal cortex gets engaged and we can make new decisions and think about different ideas and different patterns and create different pathways. So Brain Gym is like engaging the creative mind. So that's step two of the induction. So step one, and that's possible. It's really possible when we quiet the stress response. So after we've quieted the stress response, the prefrontal cortex is ready to shine. So Brain Gym is being curious and being in awe and wow and interested and something different. So Brain Gym is like brush your teeth with the opposite hand, brush your hair with the opposite hand, go up the stairs with a different leg, put your pants on with an opposite foot, do everything, like put the key in the ignition with a different hand, pick your cup up with a different hand, do everything that you do the opposite way. And that starts to get ourselves out of the old and into a new pattern. And so that's part of Brain Gym. And then, so it's also a lot of opposite. So it's a lot of crossbody movements. I often offer a pre-neurosculpting meditation, and then we do movement and shaking and vagal toning and different yoga asanas, and then a closing meditation. I really like the combo of both of them. So yeah, Brain Gym is like a lot of opposite movements, oppositional, like right hand to left leg kind of thing, and yeah, different kind of ways that you can do that in different positions and fast and slow and different tempos. And so just being out of the regular.
Well, I like during the induction how you just said, I wonder what it would be like, or I wonder what that, you know, what that feel like. And I'm thinking about habits again, and how sometimes something that, you know, we call a bad habit, say it's reaching for that glass of wine every night that you don't even know if you want, and you think, mm-hmm, I'm just going to pour it, but you don't even necessarily want it.
Right.
It's just such a part of what you do that.
Right.
That, and then once you start, then it's like, and then the next thing you do is pour another one, right? So like, that's like one example that I know a lot of women of this age kind of can struggle with. Like, how do I regulate the things I'm putting in my body or what, mm-hmm, I'm doing with my body to be more, mm-hmm, healthful for me? And getting curious and saying, I wonder what it would be like if I didn't do that. Right. I think is such a good, that just even that by itself is a great step. We never, mm-hmm, even, we don't even often think that far ahead.
Right. Right, yeah, exactly. And it's like, and it's interesting because neurosculpting also works a lot with like different kinds of mantras, but not necessarily mantras like be the light, or not these things of like ignoring what we do and our, what our life is and what this moment is right now, but like kind of putting a spin on it and being like, you know, I see myself doing the work and shifting into a bigger being that is more serving to myself, or some that, or something along those lines. Like, I see myself drinking more water. I'm going to, you know, like something kind of like reframing. So you take the no out, or take the, you take the not out, because, you know, that whole power of now kind of thing, the power, whatever we say is going to be. So if we're saying no, it's kind of going to happen.
Right. It still puts the focus on the thing you don't want. Yeah.
Right. And so it's not saying, it's not not acknowledging where we are, but it's just kind of shifting the language to make it where we want to go and where we see ourselves and how, and allowing ourselves to claim space in that and say yes to ourselves.
It almost sounds like you're writing a new story,
yes,
a new narrative.
That's exactly it. We are totally writing a new story. We're creating a whole new narrative. We're writing a new chapter. We're not ignoring what was. What was is why we are here right now. We're just creating a whole new pathway so we can just be bigger and more in our full selves and lead more with our creative mind.
I'm wondering if you ever work with clients who on the outside would look like people who, you know, kick ass and take names, get stuff done, or unstoppable, whatever. You know, we could come up with cliches all day. But somewhere in them, they doubt something so simple mm-hmm. as making a small adjustment to the way they eat or drink, or making or adding in more movement, or whatever the thing is they want to do. Like, where does that doubt come from? Because to write the story, you have to believe the story.
Right.
And you have to believe it's possible.
Right. So where does the doubt? That
yeah. They and then how do you work with them on that?
I mean, I think it comes from so many places. I think it comes from our childhood. I think it comes from how we move in the world. Like, you know, it's race, gender, age. It's all of that. Sexuality. And it's so ingrained. You know, the society is not about lifting each other up. It's about fear. So we buy things and we do this and we do whatever they say. You know, the more we don't feel good about ourselves, the more we consume, because we have to try to figure out how to feed ourselves somehow, you know. And, you know, self-doubt, it's so deep. It's so deep. And it's, I think it comes pre-womb, you know, because it's like we come out with a whole personality already. And then it gets shaped by however we've grown, you know, in whatever family life looks like and whatever school life looks like and whatever, you know, class looks like and money, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So it's so deep. And, you know, once we address where it comes from, sometimes it doesn't even matter where it comes from, because it just matters, oh, I see this thing in me. How do I rewire it? It's always good to know where it comes from because it can help. But like, if there's just a point of acknowledging me, oh, I have the stuck area. Okay, let me figure out where it comes from. But also, let's feel it and shake it out literally and figure out how to unwind it and put something else there that serves me better.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if sometimes that's just acknowledging the doubt is there because we might not know.
Right.
Like we might not even
exactly.
see it. Yeah.
That's exactly it. And that's the whole thing. It's like once we can acknowledge it, we can then do something about it. If we see it in ourselves, it means like, oh, I have this thing. I don't, like, that's not how I choose to live. I want to live in a different kind of way. So I'm noticing this. How do I shift that?
Yeah. Well, you've got a very diverse set of services that you offer to your clients, but it does really sound like they all go together and that you've really added them in a really organic way throughout your career, where it's like you were maybe, I don't know what you started with, but you know, maybe it was yoga, maybe it was meditation, and then you added on, you do Reiki, I think?
I do Reiki, yeah, I do Reiki. Massage.
Yeah, okay, so mm-hmm. you maybe you have the hands-on healing, and then we add neurosculpting and brain gym. How have you gone from one to the next to the next? Have they been things that you've discovered through transformation in your life, or are they like how has that progression happened for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's been things that like I started with massage, like started with therapeutic okay. massage, and I was doing it full time, and I was like, I needed to do something for my body so I can offer to others. And so that's how I got into like, can I was doing so much yoga for that. And right. I was like, I want to like, and then I was offering my clients different things they could do outside. And I was like, you know what, let me just become a yoga teacher. So then I could, so it was like literally just a couple of years after. So like 2003, 2005 kind of thing. And then 2003, I believe I finished massage. And then 2005, I was done with yoga certification. And then in 2007, I became a personal trainer because I was like, I want to like bring different angle to this. Like, again, I wanted to go both east and west, mm-hmm. you know, and then wellness coach and then neurosculpting. It just all fits together. And it was all because it enhanced my practice. I was like, okay, if this is feeding me and I'm organically sharing it with my clients, let me like certify myself so I can really legitly share it with them because I have more knowledge behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, Emily, I want to touch on something I see a lot in women, you know, in their like 40s-ish, which is kind of what we're aiming at for this show. And I see this sense that we're all like, we're badasses and we're tough and that's great. And I love that. And I do think that women are amazing. And I love women of this age too, a lot. But I think that what goes along with that sometimes is this idea that if we just suck it up or like, you know, like put a stiff right. upper lip or like put your shoulder into it, put your back into it, whatever it is, like just power through whatever the thing is you need to do. Just, you know, hey, dummy, just do it. And so, it sounds so easy, like we can just power through any struggle. But what you're talking about sounds so much easier. Like, it right? sounds gentler and easier and actually like it works with you instead of against you. And I'm right. wondering how you, for yourself and for the women that you serve, like how do you help us get past that mentality that like the no pain, no gain, you know what I mean? Like right. just do it mentality. And help us see it a different way.
Honestly, it is about the induction. It's like we just need to get out of our stress response because our stress response makes us like, I'm going to kill that bear. I need, you know, and it's like not a bear. It's like someone accidentally stepped on your toe.
Well, right. And our bodies, you know, from what I understand yes. and have read, like we don't actually register it any differently. So
exactly,
like the way we feel if we get a nasty email from someone is the same way yes. we feel like if they punched us in the face.
Like, exactly.
Yes. Okay.
And the society tells women to endure, tells women, you know, be small, like endure. It's fine. You're whatever. Like at least you have a little bit of space, like, which is like ridiculous because hello, we're a whole lot bigger than we are. And showing our feelings and showing all of ourselves actually allows us to take up more space and like it gives us a bigger seat at the table because when we just try to endure and like toughen up, we don't share our light. Like how are we only like we need to share our light. And the way to share our light is to quiet our limbic system, inspire the prefrontal cortex, you know, and shaking. Let me just say this. Shaking yeah. is the fastest way to regulate our nervous system. Fastest, science proven. If you think about dogs, they just shake it off. And then they move on. And what shaking does, that is so big in my practice. What shaking does, if you imagine a chalkboard super full, and that's when we're stressed, right? Or if that's when something's crazy and it's really hard to navigate words on that chalkboard, right? Like, how do you see this crazy, you know, but you're supposed to read it, but it's so confusing. What shaking does, it's the eraser on the chalkboard and it erases to a clean chalk. And then we have a blank slate to work with. Quote unquote, you know, like, and we can work with really what we're about, what we'd like to, or we can just let go for a minute. And so shaking's huge, science proven, because then we're going east and west, we're going right and left right now. Science says shaking is the fastest way to regulate the nervous system. And vagal toning is another huge thing on my practice because that is the fastest way to bring the parasympathetic down, like calm. Get out of fight or flight into rest and digest. And vagal toning is whistling, humming, blowing your lips, raspberries, singing, gargling. Any of those calms the parasympathetic. And when we can calm our parasympathetic, and that's how we're going to not toughen up. And that's how we're going to let ourselves not take that role that society wants us to have. To prove that we're good enough to be at this job. Like we don't have to prove that we are.
Right. Like, right. Like, yeah. Well, tell me more about shaking. Do you literally mean shaking?
I mean shake like you're a child. Shake like no one's watching. Shake like everyone's watching. Just shake crazy or not. That's
like,
a,
like
whatever
when,
term,
like a mom like, will say, like, get the wiggles out. Like something like that.
Yes,
like move your
get
body.
Get the
okay.
wiggles out.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it makes you laugh often. And we're all laughing right. and shaking. It's just like laughing is a huge form of medicine, you know?
Yeah.
And so shaking. Yeah. Like I literally, like my classes that I share and teach and lead are so not traditional. Like we might do some salutations or we might do some yoga asana, but mainly we're like shaking and foam rolling and vagal toning and throwing in some asana, but it's just like, how do we bring ourselves back into alignment? And it's not by being formal. Mm. Like it's not yeah. by like I mean, structure is important. I'm all about alignment. Truth is, I'm really a sucker for alignment, but it's not about like rigidity. You know, it's not about like, this is practice and like, this is how it looks and this is how it will be. And it's not about how fast can you do the sun salutations, because that's great for cardio, but alignment gets lost. It's about like, what does your body want?
Mm. Yeah. So if someone is listening to this and doesn't live in our area, I know you have a Patreon, and I know you do some video work. Do you ever work with clients remotely? Tell us kind of how the breadth of your services, whether you're local or not.
I'm mostly local, but because of the pandemic, I got real used to Zoom.
I feel like everybody's in that place right now, right?
Right. And so I have been leading a Monday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, neurosculpting and movement class. So that's on Zoom. And we do a meditation at the beginning, and then we shake and move and vagal tone and do asana. And then we do a closing meditation of neurosculpting. So that's on Zoom. I do private neurosculpting, private movement, private even partner massage or massage, like how to do self-massage. So yeah. Zoom, absolutely.
So anyone who's interested in that can go to bodybrainbalance.me, M-E, and find all the info about that there.
Yeah. All the info there.
Yeah. And there's a lot of information on this website. I would recommend anyone go check it out, even if you're just curious, because you really describe a lot of these, a lot of the services you offer and the benefits and just like kind of what it's all about. So it's a great place to start.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.